Chapter 20. Afflicted with wigglomeration, or for whose sins these young people ever fell into a pit of it, I don't know, so it is. He began to rub his head again, and to hint that he felt the wind. But it was a delightful instance of his kindness towards me that, whether he rubbed his head, or walked about, or did both, his face was sure to recover its benignant expression as it looked at mine, and he was sure to turn comfortable again, and put his hands in his pockets and stretch out his legs. Perhaps it would be best, first of all, said I, to ask Mr. Richard what he inclines to himself. Exactly so, he returned. That's what I mean. You know, just accustom yourself to talk it over, with your tact and in your quiet way, with him and Dada, and see what you all make of it. We are sure to come at the heart of the matter by your means, little woman. I really was frightened at the thought of the importance I was attaining, and the number of things that were being confided to me. I had not meant this at all. I had meant that he should speak to Richard. But of course I said nothing in reply, except that I would do my best, though I feared, I really felt it necessary to repeat this, that he thought me much more sagacious than I was. At which my guardian only laughed the pleasantest laugh I ever heard. Come, he said, rising and pushing back his chair. I think we may have done with the growlery for one day. Only a concluding word. Esther, my dear, do you wish to ask me anything? He looked so attentively at me, that I looked attentively at him, and felt sure I understood him. About myself, sir? Said one. Yes. Guardian, said I, venturing to put my hand, which was suddenly colder than I could have wished, in his, nothing. I am quite sure, that if there were anything I ought to know, or had any need to know, I should not have to ask you to tell it to me. If my whole reliance and confidence were not placed in you, I must have a hard heart indeed. I have nothing to ask you, nothing in the world. He drew my hand through his arm, and we went away to look for Ada. From that hour I felt quite easy with him, quite unreserved, quite content to know no more, quite happy. We lived, at first, rather a busy life at Bleak House, for we had to become acquainted with many residents in and out of the neighborhood who knew Mr. Jarndyce. It seemed to Ada and me that everybody knew him who wanted to do anything with anybody else's money. It amazed us when we began to sort his letters, and to answer some of them for him in the growlery of a morning, to find how the great object of the lives of nearly all his correspondents appeared to be, to form themselves into committees for getting in and laying out money. The ladies were as desperate as the gentlemen. Indeed, I think they were even more so. They threw themselves into committees in the most impassioned manner, and collected subscriptions with a vehemence quite extraordinary. It appeared to us that some of them must pass their whole lives in dealing out subscription cards to the whole post office directory, shilling cards, half-crown cards, half-sovereign cards, penny cards. They wanted everything. They wanted wearing apparel, they wanted linen racks, they wanted money, they wanted coals, they wanted soup, they wanted interest, they wanted autographs, they wanted flannel, they wanted whatever Mr. Jarndyce had or had not. Their objects were as various as their demands. They were going to raise new buildings, they were going to pay off debts on old buildings, they were going to establish in a picturesque building engraving of proposed west elevation, attached, the Sisterhood of Medieval Marys, they were going to give a testimonial to Mrs. Jellyby, they were going to have their secretary's portrait painted and presented to his mother-in-law, whose deep devotion to him was well known, they were going to get up everything, I really believe, from 500,000 tracts to an annuity, and from a marble monument to a silver teapot. They took a multitude of titles. They were the women of England, the daughters of Britain, the sisters of all the cardinal virtues separately, the females of America, the ladies of a hundred denominations. They appeared to be always excited about canvassing and electing. They seemed to our poor wits, and according to their own accounts, To be constantly polling people by tens of thousands, yet never bringing their candidates in for anything. It made our heads ache to think, on the whole, what feverish lives they must lead. Among the ladies who were most distinguished for this rapacious benevolence, if I may use the expression, was a Mrs. Pardiggle, who seemed, as I judged from the number of her letters to Mr. Jarndyce, to be almost as powerful a correspondent as Mrs. Jellyby herself. We observed that the wind always changed when Mrs. Pardiggle became the subject of conversation, and that it invariably interrupted Mr. Jarndyce, and prevented his going any farther, when he had remarked that there were two classes of charitable people, one, the people who did a little, and made a great deal of noise, the other, the people who did a great deal, and made no noise at all. We were therefore curious to see Mrs. Pardiggle, suspecting her to be a type of the former class, and were glad when she called one day with her five young sons. She was a formidable style of lady with spectacles, a prominent nose, and a loud voice, who had the effect of wanting a great deal of room. And she really did, for she knocked down little chairs with her skirts that were quite a great way off. As only Ada and I were at home, we received her timidly, for she seemed to come in like cold weather, and to make the little Pardiggles blue as they followed. "These young ladies," said Mrs. Pardiggle with great volubility after the first salutations, "are my five boys. You may have seen their names in a printed subscription list, perhaps more than one, in the possession of our esteemed friend Mr. Jarndyce. Egbert, my eldest, 12, is the boy who sent out his pocket money, to the amount of 5 3d, to the Takahupo Indians. Oswald, my second, 10 1/2, is the child who contributed 2 9d to the Great National Smithers Testimonial. Francis, my third, 9 1/6d. Felix, my fourth, 7 8d to the Superannuated Widows. Alfred, my youngest, 5, has voluntarily enrolled himself in the infant bonds of joy, and is pledged never, through life, to use tobacco in any form." We had never seen such dissatisfied children. It was not merely that they were weazened and shriveled, though they were certainly that too, but they looked absolutely ferocious with discontent. At the mention of the Takahupo Indians, I could really have supposed Egbert to be one of the most baleful members of that tribe. He gave me such a savage frown. The face of each child, as the amount of his contribution was mentioned, darkened in a peculiarly vindictive manner, but his was by far the worst. I must except, however, the little recruit into the infant bonds of joy, who was stolidly and evenly miserable. "You have been visiting, I understand," said Mrs. Pardiggle, "at Mrs. Jellyby's?" We said yes, we had passed one night there. "Mrs. Jellyby," pursued the lady, always speaking in the same demonstrative loud hard tone, so that her voice impressed my fancy, as if it had a sort of spectacles on too, and I may take the opportunity of remarking that her spectacles were made the less engaging by her eyes being what Ada called choking eyes, meaning very prominent. "Mrs. Jellyby is a benefactor to society, and deserves a helping hand. My boys have contributed to the African Project, Egbert, 1 6, being the entire allowance of 9 weeks. Oswald, 1 1/2d, being the same, the rest according to their little means. Nevertheless, I do not go with Mrs. Jellyby in all things. I do not go with Mrs. Jellyby in her treatment of her young family. It has been noticed. It has been observed that her young family are excluded from participation in the objects to which she is devoted. She may be right, she may be wrong, but, right or wrong, this is not my course with my young family. I take them everywhere." I was afterwards convinced, and so was Ada, that from the ill-conditioned eldest child, these words extorted a sharp yell. He turned it off into a yawn, but it began as a yell. "They attend matins with me very prettily done, at 6:30 in the morning all the year round, including of course the depth of winter," said Mrs. Pardiggle rapidly, "and they are with me during the revolving duties of the day. I am a school lady. I am a visiting lady. I am a reading lady. I am a distributing lady. I am on the local linen box committee and many general committees. And my canvassing alone is very extensive, perhaps no one's more so. But they are my companions everywhere. And by these means they acquire that knowledge of the poor, and that capacity of doing charitable business in general, in short, that taste for the sort of thing which will render them in after life a service to their neighbors and a satisfaction to themselves. My young family are not frivolous. They expend the entire amount of their allowance in subscriptions, under my direction. And they have attended as many public meetings, and listened to as many lectures, orations, and discussions as generally fall to the lot of few grown people. Alfred V, who, as I mentioned, has of his own election joined the infant bonds of joy, was one of the very few children who manifested consciousness on that occasion after a fervid address of 2 hours from the chairman of the evening. Alfred glowered at us, as if he never could, or would, forgive the injury of that night. You may have observed, Miss Summerson, said Mrs. Pardiggle, in some of the lists to which I have referred, in the possession of our esteemed friend Mr. Jarndyce, that the names of my young family are concluded with the name of O.A. Pardiggle, F. R. S. £1. That is their father. We usually observe the same routine. I put down my mite first, then my young family enroll their contributions, according to their ages and their little means, and then Mr. Pardiggle brings up the rear. Mr. Pardiggle is happy to throw in his limited donation, under my direction, and thus things are made, not only pleasant to ourselves, but, we trust, improving to others. Suppose Mr. Pardiggle were to dine with Mr. Jellyby, and suppose Mr. Jellyby were to relieve his mind after dinner to Mr. Pardiggle, would Mr. Pardiggle, in return, make any confidential communication to Mr. Jellyby? I was quite confused to find myself thinking this, but it came into my head. You are very pleasantly situated here, said Mrs. Pardiggle. We were glad to change the subject, and going to the window, pointed out the beauties of the prospect, on which the spectacles appeared to me to rest with curious indifference. You know Mr. Gusher? Said our visitor. We were obliged to say that we had not the pleasure of Mr. Gusher's acquaintance. The loss is yours, I assure you, said Mrs. Pardiggle with her commanding deportment. He is a very fervid, impassioned speaker full of fire. Stationed in a wagon on this lawn now, which, from the shape of the land, is naturally adapted to a public meeting, he would improve almost any occasion you could mention for hours and hours. By this time, young ladies, said Mrs. Pardiggle, moving back to her chair and overturning, as if by invisible agency, a little round table at a considerable distance with my work basket on it, by this time you have found me out, I dare say? This was really such a confusing question, that Ada looked at me in perfect dismay. As to the guilty nature of my own consciousness, after what I had been thinking, it must have been expressed in the color of my cheeks. Found out, I mean, said Mrs. Pardiggle, the prominent point in my character. I am aware that it is so prominent as to be discoverable immediately. I lay myself open to detection, I know. Well, I freely admit, I am a woman of business. I love hard work. I enjoy hard work. The excitement does me good. I am so accustomed and inured to hard work that I don't know what fatigue is. We murmured that it was very astonishing and very gratifying, or something to that effect. I don't think we knew what it was either, but this is what our politeness expressed. I do not understand what it is to be tired. You cannot tire me if you try, said Mrs. Pardiggle. The quantity of exertion which is no exertion to me, the amount of business which I regard as nothing, that I go through sometimes astonishes myself. I have seen my young family, and Mr. Pardiggle, quite worn out with witnessing it, when I may truly say I have been as fresh as a lark. If that dark-visaged eldest boy could look more malicious than he had already looked, this was the time when he did it. I observed that he doubled his right fist, and delivered a secret blow into the crown of his cap, which was under his left arm. This gives me a great advantage, when I am making my rounds, said Mrs. Pardiggle. If I find a person unwilling to hear what I have to say, I tell that person directly, I am incapable of fatigue, my good friend, I am never tired, and I mean to go on until I have done. Apostrophe it answers admirably. Miss Summerson, I hope I shall have your assistance in my visiting rounds immediately, and Miss Clare's very soon. At first I tried to excuse myself for the present on the general ground of having occupations, to attend to which I must not neglect. But as this was an ineffectual protest, I then said, more particularly, that I was not sure of my qualifications. That I was inexperienced in the art of adapting my mind to minds very differently situated, and addressing them from suitable points of view. That I had not that delicate knowledge of the heart which must be essential to such a work. That I had much to learn, myself, before I could teach others, and that I could not confide in my good intentions alone. For these reasons I thought it best to be as useful as I could, and to render what kind services I could to those immediately about me, and to try to let that circle of duty gradually and naturally expand itself. All this I said with anything but confidence, because Mrs. Pardiggle was much older than I, and had great experience, and was so very military in her manners. You are wrong, Miss Summerson, said she, but perhaps you are not equal to hard work or the excitement of it, and that makes a vast difference. If you would like to see how I go through my work, I am now about with my young family, to visit a brickmaker in the neighborhood, a very bad character, and shall be glad to take you with me. Miss Clare also, if she will do me the favor. Ada and I interchanged looks, and as we were going out in any case, accepted the offer. When we hastily returned from putting on our bonnets, we found the young family languishing in a corner, and Mrs. Pardiggle sweeping about the room, knocking down nearly all the light objects it contained. Mrs. Pardiggle took possession of Ada, and I followed with the family. Ada told me afterwards that Mrs. Pardiggle talked in the same loud tone that, indeed, I overheard, all the way to the brickmaker's about an exciting contest which she had for 2 or 3 years waged against another lady relative to the bringing in of their rival candidates for a pension somewhere. There had been a quantity of printing, and promising, and proxying, and polling, and it appeared to have imparted great liveliness to all concerned, except the pensioners who were not elected yet. I am very fond of being confided in by children, and am happy in Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.